It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ce qui se passe dans les bois est un véritable podcast sur la criminalité. Nous discutons d'événements qui sont souvent de nature violente. La discrétion de l'auditeur est conseillée.
What Happens in the Woods is a true crime podcast. We discuss events that are often violent in nature. Listener's discretion is advised.
Well, hello, and welcome back to What Happens in the Woods. It's been a long time. How's it going, Bryce?
It's going. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a little hiatus. It was my birthday, Halloween, Bryce's birthday. Yeah. We had some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Did you have a good birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah, we got beat up by...
We got assaulted by two Asian men.
Yes. That sounds horrible to say, but we went and got massages. That was Bryce's...
Massages. Oh, my God.
They were not sensual.
They were not sensual massages.
No. But I think both of us have really bad problems with, like, tension across our shoulders and our back. And, yeah, the gentleman who... was really trying to work it out. He was trying so hard. He was like, "It hurts." And I was like, "Yes, it hurts. It hurts bad."
It was bad. Like I thought they were supposed to be relaxing.
Yeah.
But I walked out of there really sore and like, "Oh my God, let's go."
Yeah. It was I greatly appreciated their efforts. No, they worked hard, and I was And then he put the hot stones on. He was like, hot, hot, hot. And I was like, oh my God, that's hot for you. Like, where are your gloves? Yeah. Where are your gloves, sir? It was distressing to me that he was like injuring himself. But then I was also in distress from being in pain. It was crazy.
It was just very sore. I was just very sore.
I'm still sore.
Like, I swear, that guy's elbows were sharp. I thought he was Wolverine. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Well, and then he walked on your back. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just one time in my life, I'd like to experience that, I think.
Well, we should have traded. I don't like that.
I'm sorry.
I didn't ask for that. I'm sure you did, making the reservation. They're like, he likes to be walked.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, can I have your November special, please? Two people.
We got two different November specials. I don't know what. There must be some miscommunication there. Fuck.
No, they do their best. Yeah. He was like, and he kept trying. He kept going back in. And I was like, no, ow, no, stop, no. He was like, I'm sorry. I was like, you shouldn't have to say I'm sorry. Just don't hurt me. Yeah. But yeah, it was well intended, because mom was like, what will he like? What will Bryce like? And I was like, well, I already have, you know, my present for him. And then she was like, well, I don't know, you guys should go do something relaxing. And I was like, well, we just got our pedicure. So mm-hmm. maybe, maybe a massage. And she was like, oh, okay, well, I'll pay for his massage. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll pay for my own. And yeah, so that was really mom. Mom paid to torture you.
Oh.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, she tried. But it was meant to be a good and relaxing time. The first hour of it was great. The second hour of it was not so great for us anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've decided that we're just going to do the first hour.
Yeah. So it's foot massage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which still includes some like neck and arm stuff. So I'm fine with that. I caught myself snoring.
Yeah.
I did. I don't know how you didn't hear me because I heard myself.
I didn't.
Were you snoring too? Were you asleep?
No.
You were.
I wasn't.
You fell asleep.
I did not.
Because
that was one of my focuses.
I swear to God, last time I don't know who was snoring, but it was what, two guys over from you the last time we went? And I kept like giggling because I thought it was Bryce, but it was somebody else that was snoring.
Yeah.
I kept giggling. And I was like, man, you fell asleep. You were loud. And he was like, I wasn't asleep.
I wasn't.
I was like, oh, my bad. I was giggling at somebody else.
Yes.
Yeah. So are you ready for Thanksgiving?
The what?
You know Thanksgiving's next week.
Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah.
Of course I am.
Are you?
Yeah.
You getting ready for the turkey?
Yeah.
You're the turkey man.
That's all. Turkey.
Turkey man.
That's all I do.
Yes.
I do the turkey.
Literally, that's it. Bryce does the turkey. I do everything else.
But isn't, you make it sound so simple. Like it's a process.
Okay. Because putting together all of the other things is not a process.
Yeah. But mine like. Work starts like 5 days before and
okay,
thawing the turkey,
uh-huh,
brining the turkey,
mm-hmm,
and then preparing it.
Mm-hmm. Again, the one thing.
And I, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you've never had a dry turkey.
Mm.
Don't. Mm. Stop.
No, your turkey's been great ever since you found that recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I found the secrets of brine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the turkey's been great. Everything else is manageable, I guess.
Thanks.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. We buy the desserts, though, so I don't make those. I'm not a baker.
No. So. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And I know everybody's going to give me shit, but I don't make the gravy. I don't make gravy either. I'm not skilled. It's not everybody can do it.
No, I still love you.
That's fine. Even if you didn't love me, I still wouldn't try. I know my limitations. So.
Okay.
But yeah, when you guys are hearing this, we are 1 week away. Actually, it'll be a week from less than a week, I guess. Wow. 6 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully everybody has a good and safe holiday. And what else? What else is going on in our lives?
We did a takeover.
We did a takeover. You're right. So we got to sit down and take over Crime Diner. And we got to record with them. They got the dinner and the dessert and the drinks, but we had the pleasure of their company.
Correct.
While they were eating awesome. And doing that. Yeah, no, it was great. It felt like it does when I'm listening to them. I feel like I'm in the room.
Yeah.
When I listen, I'm in the car, but when I listen to them, I feel like I'm in the room with them. Like we're just all sitting down shooting the shit. And that's how it felt like to be like with them and record with them.
Yeah.
It was a good time. And I swear to God, I'm going to book a ticket to go to Jersey.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drag show.
Okay.
I'm going.
You keep threatening.
You can't stop me.
Wasn't?
I'm just going to do it.
Okay.
Okay. And then I'm going to show up on somebody's door. I don't know who has the extra room. If it was Nydia or Cindy or Dana, I'm not sure who it is, but whoever's got the extra room, I'm gonna need an address and a key under the mat. Yeah. So I'm coming. Yeah. But that'll be out on their podcast November 30th, I believe.
I believe so.
Yeah. So we'll keep everybody updated. But that was a good time.
Good times.
Yeah.
Not just that, but it's always fun. I find it fascinating to watch other podcasts like create.
Yeah.
Like their process of recording.
Yeah.
Whew. That is an intricate show there.
No, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because they're sitting there eating food.
Yeah,
that Cindy has prepared, yeah. And like dessert, and they've got drinks. Like it has been made for that show, yeah. For that day, thought out, you know, planned. And yeah, I really think that they're, I don't know, they just have, they have a good chemistry.
They do.
They're on it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And they always have, they have fun with things, but they don't take themselves too seriously, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like us.
It was good.
No,
I don't know
fun.
That we, do we not take ourselves too seriously? I feel like sometimes we do.
I don't.
You don't?
Have you heard our intro for WTF?
No, that's true. Speaking of WTFs.
Uh-oh.
What do you mean, uh-oh? I should be saying, uh-oh, because every time we do a WTF, there's some new shit.
There's no new shit.
What the fuck ever. WTFs are coming back in February.
There's no new stuff for WTFs.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
Okay.
I don't. I don't. When we actually sit down and record those, I'm... How much will I get?
Are you going to check all the
buttons? No, because I don't even know where all the buttons are. Okay. You've got stacks on stacks of buttons. You've got portable buttons. You've got machine buttons. You've got...
Yeah.
I don't even know. I don't even know what you have.
Yeah.
There's no way for me to know what you have as far as buttons and sounds and all of that. How would I even keep up?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no way. So I'm resigned to the fact that Bryce will have something that will be a surprise. Oh, okay, whatever. You're not fooling me, but that's fine. I'm not buying your bullshit.
Okay.
Seriously, I'm not.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
But yes, February, WTF Wednesdays.
Yay.
Yay. Which means that this season will come to an end.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, wah, wah, wah. So our last episode for this season will be in January.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get on to the fun things for February.
Okay.
Okay. I know you can hardly wait. You're sitting with anticipation.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you have any announcements?
No.
No? None?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we can get into our case.
Oh, okay. What do you got for us?
Well, I don't know. What do you got for us? Because guess what, guys?
Uh-oh.
Guess what? Bryce has a case for us.
I always have one in the chamber.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Well, we're pulling it out. Right. So, yeah. It's all you. I just get to sit here, pet a dog.
And yeah. React.
And react.
React.
Hey, don't Whatever. You tell me what to do.
All right. So I'm going to tell you a story.
A story.
Yeah. And it happened in Tacoma.
What happened was.
And I want to tell you about the time the Army took on the Crips.
The Crips?
The Crips.
Into Compton,
yes.
For those of you who are not in the Pacific Northwest, Tacoma is sometimes lovingly referred to as Tecompton.
It is. It's very
yeah, nice. Which I really don't think, I don't know. I've only been to Compton once, and I don't think Tacoma is the same, but you know,
you may change your mind.
Okay. Well, change my mind.
All right.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So it's 1989. Oh, you know what? Wait a minute. Can I do your intro?
Sure.
Do it in Jessica style intro.
Oh, God. Okay. Sure.
You ready?
Sure. Are you going to imitate me?
Yeah. Here we go. Uh-huh. Ready?
It's 1989, and Sergeant Bill Folk purchased a home in one of Tacoma's worst neighborhoods. The street was home to one of the most notorious street gangs Washington State has ever known, the Hilltop Street Gang. Sergeant Folk was witness to numerous drug deals and illegal activities and reported this to authorities several times. But when that failed to garner a police response, Sergeant Folk had no problem confronting the Hilltop Street Crips himself. Tired of Sergeant Folk's threats, the Crips threatened and ambushed Sergeant Folk's house, but not before he invited some of his friends from the 2nd Ranger Battalion to his house for a barbecue. And after 10 minutes and more than 300 rounds had been fired, the Crips soon realized they were in a fight for their lives.
And that night, it all came to a head.
Shots fired?
Yeah, about 100 of them.
It sounds like there's a war going on.
Did you see who fired the shot, sir?
For Christ's sake, no!
Are you called a vigilante?
Yeah, but I don't think so. I don't think I'm a vigilante.
Wow.
Hello, friends. Sorry.
Wow, are you coming for my job? I feel obsolete now. I feel like I don't even need to be here.
No, you do. You do.
Okay.
Here, see, this is your job. Not me. Now I have to edit this afterwards.
You still have to edit me afterwards. So what difference does that make?
We'll see.
So yeah, showdown into Compton.
Yes.
Damn. All right. Well, how did we get to this point?
So, picture it.
Oh, now you're going to be Sophia too? Yes. Damn.
So, it's 1989, and the country is dealing with an economic downturn that defined the 80s and the early 90s. So, the communities around the nation were also suffering from the gang infestation from the 80s. That's when the gangs blew up.
Right.
You know. And from that was born the crack epidemic. I don't know why that was so hard to say. Which hit the nation hard. So hard that President Ronald Reagan declared a war on drugs.
Oh,
which
Jesus.
Brought tougher and more lengthy prison sentences for street dealers.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm sure everyone that grew up in the 80s also remembers Nancy Reagan's campaign of Just Say No.
Yes. Yeah.
But we all know neither one of those campaigns did little to control gang violence or the illegal drug use.
Yeah, they didn't do anything do that. And honestly, what they should have been focused on is these upper class, you know, members of society who were funding this.
Oh, yeah.
And actually purchasing the drugs.
Yeah.
And how it impacted, you know, the socioeconomics of what it did for underprivileged people, because there's a whole effect here that we could go into. It was basically a bullshit move by some very rich white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for Washington State, it was no different. As a matter of fact, Tacoma was the epicenter for gang activity. After the crack epidemic exploded, the Crips and Bloods from California moved north to find new places for gang recruitment and drug dealing. And Tacoma's Hilltop was considered one of the worst, with people openly selling crack on street corners. There were tons of graffiti and gang shootings happening more frequently. And I think this comes from, like, I kind of know why people now say, like, if you say, oh, I'm from California, I think the stigma is with it. Like, because the gangs of Southern California moved up here, Crips and Bloods. And so now when you, and especially in this area, because we're so close to Tacoma, that when you say, oh, I'm from California, they kind of go, oh, okay.
You know, I hadn't thought of that before. I really didn't realize that the gang... Because being from California, you hear all about it. Like, you know, places where I've lived have been notoriously
Yeah.
Like, you know, it is a part of life. And I assumed that was in every state somewhat. You know, I didn't think that, like, in the Midwest they were having problems with gangs, you know, like in the central states like Iowa.
Yeah.
I wasn't really thinking that they were going to have problems with gangs. But, you know, on these coast states that have larger cities,
mm-hmm.
you know, East Coast, West Coast, all of it, I always assumed that gangs were everywhere because they were pretty much everywhere where I was.
I mean, I think that, I guess it depends on how you define a gang.
Yeah.
Because, like, East Coast, I think even Chicago, you define it as mafia.
Do they still define it that way?
Well, I mean, it's...
Because there's gangs there, too.
There are.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is I didn't think that California had the origin of things and that it moved up here. I just kind of, in my head, there was no progression of it. It just was.
No, that's not to say, like, in this, in the research, there was always drugs.
Yeah.
But not gang activity.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would leave a sour taste in anybody's mouth if you say you're from California and you know you were living in this area when gangs came up.
I
could see where you'd be like, yeah.
So I have a quote here. It says, "We had this open drug gang phenomenon that was occurring in Tacoma that we had never experienced before." This was from Bob Sheehan, who's now the assistant police chief, but then he was a sergeant who worked the Hilltop area.
Mm.
We didn't know how to respond to it, and we were doing our best, but we were struggling with it.
Yeah.
And that was, that's a quote from Bob Sheehan.
Wow. Yeah, I could see where they would struggle, because you have to think differently when you're combating, like, you know, drug selling and use and those things. You have to think a little bit differently, because sometimes those people are, you know, it's mental health issues. Sometimes it's other things. And then you add the drugs or alcohol on top of it, and it really changes how people would act in a situation. And you can't, you know, you have to think about how to police that. But then you add on to it people who just don't give a fuck about anything other than staying alive and, you know, doing whatever the fuck they want, basically. It's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's kind of that mentality of, I'm gonna fuck you before you fuck me.
Basically.
And that's how they live day to day. And a lot of us will never live that way or don't think that way. And I don't know how you can, you know, how do you get somebody to realize that their actions that they've taken, if they think that way, are poor? They're making poor choices with their lives. You can't get somebody to think about what they're doing and, you know, try to police their activities, because they just assume kill you or die.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. It makes the job 10 times harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So enter Sergeant Bill Folk of the 2nd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. And in 1987, Sergeant Folk wanted to lay down roots. And Sergeant Folk purchased a home in the South Ash Street in Tacoma. He purchased the home for $10,000.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
The fuck?
So adjusted for inflation, like, it'd be $20,000 in 2019. So $20,875 in 2019.
But still, 2019?
Yeah. Well, okay. So when he purchased the home, it was condemned.
Okay.
So it had, like, he moved in, it had no windows, no doors, no wiring, no plumbing, nothing. It was definitely a fixer-upper.
Mm.
And so when you put all that time and energy into a place, not only did he build a home, he was building a community. And that's what Ash Street was to him, a community. He also purchased a home in hopes that the area would turn around and his investment, you know, that he made would, you know, profit.
Yeah.
But that's,
Mm.
That didn't happen.
Obviously not. We're here for a story.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to 1989, and Sergeant Folk had just returned from a December deployment in Panama. And when he returned, he saw that his neighborhood had gotten worse. Drug dealers selling openly in front of their houses on the street, you know, where little kids play. Mm. There were shootouts with the Crips and Bloods over the territory.
Mm.
It just got bad. He was, you know, and this is a guy that returned from war.
Right.
To his home.
Right.
And he's like, this is worse.
What? So who was taking care of his house while he was gone?
Oh, they never said.
Oh.
And he never mentioned it.
Hmm.
Never mentions a wife or anything like that, or okay. kids, but, yeah.
I mean, I would hope his, you know, wife and kids wouldn't be there, but obviously there are families around because there's little kids around. I would hope that none of them would be there, but,
yeah.
you know, be that as it may. But, yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, who took care of his house? Like, did he rent it out?
But like I said, there were a lot of people that were, like, in this neighborhood that loved their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it was such a stark contrast between the people. So in this neighborhood, they weren't all helpless victims. This neighborhood was very cohesive. There were a lot of good families on that street, and one of them was Shirley Luckett, a 33-year-old mother. She lived on that street at the time. She was known as a busybody and a spitfire. She had no problem taking down license plates, and she would often confront the drug dealers. And she wasn't afraid of confrontation, and she called the police on a regular basis. And just as an instance, her son was riding his bike to the store, you know, like we could in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, we used to do that.
You know, ride your bike. Your mom would say, hey, go get something at the store. But as you know, the Hilltop Crips claim blue, and he was wearing a red shirt when he was going to the store. And they didn't take kindly to that, and they chased him home. Now, he wasn't hurt, but, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, I think it said, one of the reports said he was 9 at the time.
Oh, shit.
And he doesn't know any better.
No.
But those were some of the things that, like, she was dealing with, and, like, she would confront them about. And like I said, there was a lot of people in this neighborhood that were, they loved their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, and like I said, you had drug dealers moving in.
Yeah.
You had people openly selling. So.
Yeah.
And like she called the police regularly, Miss Luckett, and the police response to that neighborhood was very lackluster. Like they would call the police and maybe 15 minutes later, after all the activities had died down, police would drive by and nothing would be done. Like the gangsters or the gangbangers and the drug dealers would go back into their house. And a lot of the people in the neighborhood were very like pissed.
Yeah.
Like nothing was being done.
Yeah.
And, that's when, after that, that's when the neighborhood formed a neighborhood group. Now, they don't call it a neighborhood watch, but it's something very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they started doing was actively calling the police. They were petitioning the police. They were protesting the police, demanding that their neighborhood get more attention or the police just do more about the open drug market and the gangbangers in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Just actively like pressing the police. Like, hey... Here, you know, hey, we've seen this. We've caught this. This is what's going on. We've written down all these license plates. The police couldn't do anything.
So they, I mean, like people weren't coming. There's a narcotics division. There's always been some kind of narcotics divisions, right? Like, did that stem from the 80s when all this shit happened?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't they send some people undercover? Why wouldn't they come and stake out the neighborhood? Why wouldn't... And,
you know what was very interesting was I watched a 48 Hours report from this specific, like, Tacoma incident.
Uh-huh.
And there was a detective there, but, like, and they were, quote-unquote, underfunded is what they said. Now, whether that's true or not. Yeah,
no, I think so. I think, I mean, there are a few things that we reported on, or, you know, the cases that I've talked about that, like, Seattle and Tacoma were underfunded because they didn't think that these types of cases were going to need much work. But they still had some people. Yeah. It's just, yeah, they, You would think, though, if you know it's in a centralized area, mm-hmm. why you come to the problem before the problem comes to you.
But it gets worse for Hilltop.
Oh, shit. Wow.
So the police chief at the time, Ray Fetlin, was under pressure, and he was also dealing with budget constraints.
Mm.
And he was trying to make a change in the Tacoma Police Department, and he was pushing a new tactic, such as community policing.
Mm-hmm.
But these new tactics of community-oriented policing, you know, were getting out of your car or getting to know your neighbors was viewed as suspicious by the veteran cops who, you know, typically came up in the 60s and preferred the old ways.
Mm, sure.
Yeah. And like I read something that they called Over the Radio and Over the Hood.
Hmm.
And I didn't put it in, but it was the old style of policing. So like if it mm-hmm. came over the radio and it didn't happen over your hood,
mm-hmm.
like you could just forget it and move on. There'd be less violence.
Oh. So basically unseen, unworries. Yeah.
But that's what they called it. If you didn't see it over your hood, it never happened.
Hmm.
You know, not
too. Must be nice.
Yeah.
Very convenient. Yeah, there's a lot of growing pains that happens when old school ways don't work.
No. Hmm. You know. It's just like when they say 60s and old ways, I always think of like how they treated, you know, minorities and things. Anyway,
oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, there are numerous things that I could come up, you know.
Yeah. Like
the Compton riots or the right. Zoot Suit riots.
Right.
Or, you know, the Stockton or the Watsonville riots.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's all my education from California. But anyway. So Chief Fetlin would make a decision that he may have regretted, which may have led to the situation where he actively reassigned 4 of the 6 officers that were assigned to the Hilltop neighborhood. And this didn't sit well with the neighborhood on Ash Street. As a response, Sergeant Folk set up a video camera on the second story of his home to capture and combat the crime in his neighborhood.
So you mean to tell me that there were how many officers assigned to this neighborhood?
6 officers. And he reassigned the 4 of them to push this new community policing effort.
Who was supposed to be community policing? The community or the police?
The police. This was where they would take in every call and, like, you know, address every call, but also get out, you know.
Yeah, meet the people.
Meet
sure.
the neighbors, meet the people, talk to them, you know, don't deny, you know, like there was one example in there is like, oh, yes, I understand you can't sleep when the dogs are barking at night. And we'll try to come out and fix that and remedy that situation. So, I mean, it was just like, you know, that was just one of the examples they had.
The fuck up.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's just like this is what they were trying to push. And I get the gist behind it. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know the community.
Yes, but that goes hand in hand with showing an enforcement, with showing an authority of being able to enforce the law. You can't do that if there's only 2 people for a neighborhood that
should have 6. And that didn't tell me if there was just like 1 guy in the day and 1 guy at the night. You know
probably.
What I mean? Like it didn't say that. But if you knew Hilltop was a horrible neighborhood and you were trying to community police, wouldn't you keep those officers there too?
Right.
At least.
To show, because there's so many cliches. There's strengths in numbers. There's.
But not just that, like, you know, these guys in the Ash neighborhood, on Ash Street were actively telling the police, calling them on a regular basis, protesting. It's not like they weren't being quiet about it, you know, and then Chief Fetlin does this, you know, reassigns. Right,
that's
for the
a slap
officers.
In your face. That's I could give a shit what's happening in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
That to me is your approach at trying to fix a situation is actually actively leading to the situation getting worse.
No, and that's why I said this decision, you know, may have led to this. It may, you know.
I'm going to say it did.
The whole logic of this just kind of makes me like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No, but even towards the end, you're just going to, what Tacoma Police Sergeant says at the end, I'm just like, shut the fuck up.
No, wow.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yes, you are. Sorry.
So while while Sergeant Folk set up this camera in the second story, he caught the attention of the street dealers and the, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They knew it was up there.
Yeah.
But also after that decision to reassign four officers to the community policing program, the neighborhood decided to, or Bill, Sergeant Folk decided to throw a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And so on September 23rd, 1989, the neighborhood held a neighborhood barbecue to discuss some of the strategies about combating the crime in the neighborhood, since the police would not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of took matters into their own hands.
Sure.
And not to be vigilantes. Like, they weren't actively going out and, like, roughing people up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I think of vigilante, I always think of Batman, you know. But they weren't Batmaning the neighborhood. So the barbecue was to be held at 3 p.m. and Sergeant Folk would invite families of the neighborhood, some of his friends, and a couple of his buddies from work, you know, the 2nd Ranger Battalion.
Sure.
So the neighbors brought, you know, their families, their kids. They were cooking hamburgers. And while everyone was there, there was a house across the street, and it was a suspected drug house, or as we call it today, a trap house,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, so the people at this suspected drug house were like throwing rocks, and there was a report of them throwing rotting pears from a tree where it was like, they said it was like one of the neighbor's house, but they started throwing things at this barbecue. Mainly they were like, I think they weren't happy because of the camera, you know what I mean? And so they were trying, not only that, but they were trying, I guess, rouse the people at the barbecue.
Sure. I'm sure they were.
Because, like, there was even a report, and like, there was so many different reports. But and I can tell why now. But, you know, there's, like, an official report, and then mm-hmm. there's, like, eyewitness accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some, like, eyewitness accounts after 20 years that they finally spoke up and said something.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'll cover some of those, but a lot of them, you know, didn't happen until 20 years later.
Wow.
So after they were like pelted with rotting pears and things like that, you know, what would any staff sergeant from the 2nd Ranger Battalion and a couple of his Ranger buddies do?
I'm sure they went over and
they did
had a nice conversation.
They had a nice conversation. They had a very nice talk.
Yeah. You know?
They walked across the street and told the group to leave the neighbors alone. However, instead of backing down, Sergeant Folk said the group threatened to burn down his home and shoot him.
Oh.
And if he didn't take down his video camera and stop filming them.
Yeah.
Sergeant Folk, realizing the situation, he backed away and went back to the house and to the barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And as he walked away, he could hear one of the Crips or the gang members saying, "I'm going to shoot that army son of a bitch."
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. And Sergeant Folk and his friends, you know, realizing they're not going to get anywhere, they walk back to the barbecue and just let it go.
Yeah.
You know, some of the reports saying, you know, those guys walked over, told them to stop and do better things with their lives, which I kind of laugh at.
Yeah. I'm sure that's exactly what was said. Yeah.
So, like I said, the barbecue started at 3, and at around 6:30 p.m., a car drives down the street and fires a shot into the air. And Sergeant Folk thinks it was a warning shot.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So
you mad now.
Yeah. So Sergeant Folk, being an Army Ranger, realizes trouble might be coming. And with a house full of families with their young children, he sends everyone home. He then puts out a call to Fort Lewis and says, "Hey, this is Sergeant Folk. I'm at home. I'm about to come under attack, and I need every available Ranger at my house now." And after the call was put out, a total of 15 Rangers had arrived at Sergeant Folk's house. And the Rangers showed up. It was a BYOB party. Bring your own bullets. The Rangers were armed with handguns, shotguns, and rifles. You know, basically doing what soldiers know how to do best.
Yeah.
So the Rangers talked it over and came up with a plan about using a defensive perimeter. Not shooting first and only firing when fired upon. Also, if the police show up, they would disarm and they wouldn't resist and assist if needed. This was their plan.
So I'm kind of like, can you just do that? Can you be like, "Hey, I'm one of you. I'm going to need some backup at my personal residence. Shit's about to go down. I need every available ranger
I mean,
to show up. Like, can you really do that?
But here's the thing is like, and I'm glad they use common sense and they, I mean, if people show up on their own.
Yeah, but like, who did he call at Fort Lewis? Like, he just put in a call to who?
It didn't say.
Okay.
But he just called.
So I'm like, you're not going to call the fucking army and be like, hey, I need backup at my house. They're not going to send sergeants and rangers to your house. You're civilian property.
He's a staff sergeant. He commands some people. He can be like, look, man, I got some shit going down. I need backup.
I mean, I could see a personal call. I'm like, you're calling the fort? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he called an on-duty sergeant and he's like, hey, put the call out.
Maybe. Yeah.
So the rangers took up their defensive positions around the house. And around 9:20 p.m., a car was spotted driving down the street. And it stopped, made a U-turn, and turned off its lights. And the car headed back down towards Sergeant Folk's house.
That's never a good sign.
Sergeant Folk returned the favor, turned off all the lights in his yard and in his house. And when we return from this break, we'll continue the story of the shootout on Ash Street.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
After a few hours of holding their defensive positions, one ranger noticed a car with its lights off driving down the street. At 9:20 p.m., someone driving in that vehicle fired a shot. The house was now taking fire from the rear, and according to Tacoma police reports, it was small caliber, more likely 9mm automatic gunfire. Hearing this, the rangers returned fire, but so did the Hilltop Crips. Ranger William Edwards was positioned on the front porch, and when the shooting started, he hit the ground as a bullet slammed into the wall beside him. Other rangers returned fire, seeing figures running amongst parked cars on the other side of the street. Ranger Russell Nolte, posted in the backyard, crawled forward as a shot hit the back of the house just 3 feet over his head. Ranger Burr Settles was positioned upstairs by the infamous video camera as a shot came through the window. The bullet grazed his head and he received multiple lacerations on his face from the shattered glass.
Damn.
The rangers were now taking fire from the east, and by all accounts, they could see at least 16 shooters firing from three different directions. And at the same time, a neighbor dialed 911 while taking cover on her kitchen floor. The first police car showed up on the scene and the rangers disarmed themselves, but someone from the Hilltop Crip gang shot at the police car. And it could be seen reversing out of the neighborhood, tire smoking. Officers reported they could hear 50 to 60 shots in less than 1 minute. Shortly after that, more units arrived on the scene and the area, and according to the Tacoma police report, subjects were seen fleeing. Some of those subjects were pursued, and some got caught and detained. And for an estimated 10 to 30 minutes, the two groups exchanged intense fire in an intense gun battle on the residential streets of Tacoma. By numerous accounts, witnesses said hundreds of rounds were fired from handguns, shotguns, and semi-automatic weapons, but somehow no one was hurt.
None of those bullets hit anybody?
Not in the official reports.
Okay.
So after the gunfight, Sergeant Folk walked out to his driveway, which is in the back in an alley, and was immediately shoved to the ground and handcuffed. He didn't resist, and he didn't fight.
So the police handcuffed him?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they were just handcuffing everybody at the scene because they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, they didn't know what the fuck was going on, but okay.
So one of the suspected gang members was cornered by a police canine, and his name was Frankie Strickland. And he was found to be in possession of 16 9mm bullets who he was holding for a quote-unquote friend, but couldn't remember the friend's name.
That's the worst line. You got to stop with it. Yeah. Criminals, you've got to stop saying it's for a friend.
Yeah. Frankie Strickland was also found with a 9mm handgun who he was also holding for a friend.
Right, right. My buddy. Mm-hmm.
Another gang member was found and was caught with copperhead rounds on him for a gas gun. What that is, I have no idea. I've never heard of a gas gun. Maybe the report. I don't know what that is. Maybe a CO2 gun.
Maybe.
But I don't know. That's what the report said was a gas gun. Copperheads.
I don't know. But I'm not. I definitely don't have knowledge base there.
Well, I remember like my dad had a pellet gun and the bullets. Like the BBs or the pellets were copperheads. So I'm thinking that's what it is, but why would you bring that to a gunfight? Like you're pumping a BB gun up for a gunfight. I don't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't. That would be stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah. That's the only thing I can think.
Yeah, I don't think that they're bringing their Red Ryder out.
Because that's what they were shooting at the camera window too. Was like they were throwing rocks and they were shooting BBs at it.
Okay, well that I could see, but they're not in this. I can't see somebody having that in this case.
Maybe if that's all you got, I don't know.
I have a hard time believing that that's all they got when the dude was holding that for his friend.
Yeah.
He was holding a gun and bullets for his friend. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that, or maybe he was the friend.
Maybe.
Maybe he was the friend that the other guy was holding the bullets and the gun for.
Maybe.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with that. So after the situation was under control, the sergeant from the Tacoma Police Department learned of the defensive operation of the Rangers, and he wasn't too happy about it.
Oh, well, shucks.
Yeah. He was not happy because they didn't call for the police assistance, which, you know, it's kind of ironic because that's how they got into this in the first place.
Call for the police assistance for what? To do what with your two officers in the community, whatever the fuck kumbaya you wanted to do?
Yeah. I mean, it was funny. They said they should have called them when, you know, they were threatened or before the first bullet was fired.
Hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay. Sure. Sure. Yes. But also, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after quite possibly what could have been a 35-man gunfight with over 300 rounds fired, from the official version, nobody was shot or killed or even seriously hurt.
Wow.
But there were some rumors that were flying around that for obvious reasons, some of the alleged gang members were treated at Seattle area hospitals, which is over an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
And some may have been mortally wounded, but again, for previous reasons, was not reported.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, you don't walk into a emergency room and say, oh, yeah, I was in a gunfight in Tacoma, and can you please patch me up? I mean,
even if you're out of the area and you just, you know, you got shot, you could just say, oh, man, it was like I was just walking in some random shooting. They wouldn't tie it into like the Ash Street shooting.
Right.
In Tacoma, you know.
Right. So, anyway. Yeah, no, they're not going to do that.
There was a quote from Sergeant Folk that said, and I didn't include it in here, but I just thought it was an interesting tidbit. He actually saw, and this was his quote, he saw one of the gang members walk up to the front door. He does, and he goes, I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he thought he was going to John Wayne it.
Mm.
But he walked to the front door, and a ranger shot him in the shoulder, and the guy stumbled back. And he like ran off. They don't know where he went. You know, it was so dark there. He ran off and, you know.
So the personal accounts are saying that people were injured.
Oh, yeah.
But the official account is that nobody was injured. Hmm.
But like, and some of the things that I was reading also, like gang members were hurt and they would just like run off the scene. Like they would just run into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
There was some personal accounts that said like two or three of them were taken in a car and just driven off the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, that didn't come out till like 20 years later. And remember, this happened in 89, so it was like over 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, and accounts could change.
Well, wait a minute. That's not over 40 years ago.
30?
Don't do that math to me. We're not that old.
Oh, no. Yeah, 30. Sorry, 30.
The hell's wrong with you?
Yeah. So, in the aftermath, Doug Sutherland, who was the mayor of Tacoma at the time, had considered enacting a version of martial law to combat the gang violence, which drew national attention at this point. And at the same time, Governor Booth Gardner had considered sending in the National Guard to Ash Street to help the situation. And then miraculously, the Tacoma police found the money to add more officers to the street patrol to help combat the gang situation.
Miraculously. Mm-hmm. So you mean to tell me that just coincidentally at the time of this shootout, they were looking at bringing in the National Guard? Or as a result of this shootout?
As a result of this shootout, like in the aftermath.
I was going to say, isn't that very convenient time-wise? Yeah. But, okay. No. Okay.
But I don't know what the National Guard would have done on one street. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's the thing is these are not people who are going to be in one area. These are people that spread out into other areas.
Yeah. But I mean, none of this came to pass, but.
That would have been stupid, but okay.
So the one gang member that was caught with the 16 rounds and the 9mm handgun, Frankie Strickland, he was the only person ever charged in the shooting. And he was charged with second degree assault, and he only served 22 months in prison.
Wow. That's not a lot.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
As for Sergeant Folk and the Rangers, the military officially considered this incident a matter of self-defense for the off-duty Rangers, and they were not charged with anything.
I mean, rightfully so, I think. I do have a hard time with agreeing with, you know, let's just take the matter into our own hands. But also, you have been threatened.
Yeah.
You're, you know, obviously with the type of training that this man has and the company that he keeps, you're not going to take that lightly. And you already know what the police are going to not do for you. Yeah. So.
I don't think when the gang members were, or the drug dealers or whoever was talking shit to them, don't realize that these guys are all elite operators.
Probably not.
Like, and this is, they do this for a living.
I mean, right. Day in, day out. Yeah.
They could be called at a moment's notice to deploy somewhere and kick ass. Like, they just fucking.
Right.
This is their job.
Yeah. No, for sure. And it's different when you think you're living a lifestyle compared to your training kicks in because you're not, when you are trained to do something like that, you're not gonna, you respond immediately.
Yeah.
There's no like, oh, what the fuck do we do? What do we do? What do we do? No, they already know what to do. They've already done it. They've already implemented it before you even realize what the fuck is going on. So you kind of did fuck with the wrong people Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
So in February of 2010, a task force made up of Tacoma Police, the FBI, the South Sound Gang Unit, and other state and federal law enforcement agencies rounded up and arrested 32 people with 51 charges ranging from attempted murder, home invasion, and carjackings, all associated with the Hilltop Crips.
From this incident?
Yeah. Well, not just this incident. No, it's just they went in and combated the Hilltop gang.
It wasn't until, you said that was 2010?
2010.
This happened in 89.
89.
What took so long?
I don't know what took so long. But that was just recent news that I had seen in 2010. Like, they went in and arrested, you know, 32 people. And all of them got 51 charges.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So a few years back, and this is resurging because of certain things that are happening in Tacoma. But a few years back, Tacoma Police Department officer was quoted as saying, "It was the single most important incident in Tacoma that caused a change in police policies and practices. This incident here, the Ash Street shootout." Because I think, you know, just the failures at every turn for this neighborhood that was crying out for help.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're all,
I mean, absolutely.
Know, yeah. And it wasn't just, you know, Army Rangers that lived there. It was like people, all sorts. Like, I was watching that 48 Hours and they were interviewing everybody on the street. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't just like, you know, there were single moms. There mm-hmm. was, you know, like a ton. The neighborhood was very diverse. It wasn't just, you know, one single type of, you know, mm-hmm. group, but yeah.
Where was the change though?
Just in the way that, you know, community policing, more resources were afforded there. And like mm-hmm. it happened because actually after the shootout, there's an article that I'll link that the patrols doubled in that area and in mm-hmm. all the high crime areas. And, you know, they changed a lot of the ways that, you know, and a lot of it was the community policing where, you know, people were talking more with neighbors and finding out what was really going on and just going through and really finding out the ins and outs of a neighborhood where before people were just in their patrol car, like I said, over the mm-hmm. radio, over the hood. Never really needing to leave their patrol car.
Okay, well, sure.
That's just what he was told to say.
No, I see. I mean, I see it. I think that it's very easy to say like, oh, wow, there's a need and we're going to find the funding and we're going to fix this problem and we're going to... You've obviously failed already. Mm-hmm. You failed because now, you know, an Army Ranger and a bunch of his other Ranger friends have come in and had to clean up a mess in a neighborhood. And now you're realizing that there's failure here and now you're backtracking.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's easy to see on the other side, you know, nobody knew how to combat that at that time. It really was trial and error. But I just, to say that statement to me just brings a, I don't know, idiocy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I guess I should have looked that up, like what they really did change. But I said it was the single most important incident.
I can see that. I'm not trying to make light of the statement because obviously there was this incident would have been a huge incident for this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the, you know, kind of a turning point. It's just, it's a shame that it took this incident for police and for other entities, you know, governmental entities to realize that in this neighborhood, these families who were trying to make a neighborhood and trying to make a community and mm-hmm. just trying to live their lives are being infringed upon by certain citizens.
Yeah.
You know, and it really should not have come to that.
No, it shouldn't have.
And it's great that you had that aha moment of, oh man, we need to fix this and what can we do? And let's, you know, throw more support their way and money their way. That's great. But what if it had ended up in the official report that somebody got shot? What if it was a kid that got shot?
Yeah.
And you guys knew that these things were happening and you, instead of putting resources towards it, you cut resources and you weren't responding.
I mean, they didn't cut resources. They reassigned them.
Yeah, sure. You know, the English language has a lot of different words that mean the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, phraseology is a real thing. It's a gift for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That statement irks me. And maybe it shouldn't, but it does. I have a lot of statements that irk me, but that's just me.
So, in the end, Sergeant Folk left the army in 1993. And to this day, he still lives in the same house on the street. Yeah.
Wow.
He since repaired the house, but he left one bullet hole as a scar and a reminder of the incident that happened September 23rd, 1989.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess that really is just a story of like a testament of this is my place and I'm going to defend it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And I really, like I watched a recent interview with him because of certain events that are, and I'll bring those up here in a little bit, but certain events that are happening in Tacoma, and he was recently interviewed, you know, and he went through all the things in the house and he showed pictures of that day, but he showed also pictures of like when he bought the house and things like that. And like, I believe his statement, like he was really, you know, trying to build a community and start that. And for him to still be there.
Yeah.
Is like, he really loved the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Props to him.
Yeah. No, I definitely. I think I would have been like, peace out, bitches. Yeah. Like, you get to shoot my house, I'm going to have to leave. No. Yeah. I mean, but I also, you know, given what he does for what he did at the time for a living, I'm not sure what he does now, but
I'm not sure either.
Given his training and his history.
A thing that he worked for the Justice Department for 29 years. Okay. I think that's him. Mm-hmm. I can't make sure. But I mean, there was a thing that on LinkedIn that said he'd worked for the Justice Department for 29 years. But there was no picture. There's nothing. And I can't confirm that. Yeah. But
Well, good for you for like holding your ground and just, you know, not putting up with bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely, I mean, good for all of those families, really. Like the mom, the single mom who was like, you're not going to fuck with my kid. You know, this is where we live and this is what we're doing. And
I think they fucked up there too. Like, you don't mess with a mama bear.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm sure all of those families, anybody that was, you know, calling the police, anybody that was reporting things, anybody that was protesting, anybody that was, you know, they're probably down at City Hall going to town hall meetings. They were probably, you know, they were probably really putting the time and effort in to try to make some change for their families, for their community. Oh, like that, it really takes a tenacity and a desire and a strength to be able to stand up to somebody that you know could give a fuck about your life.
Yeah.
You know, if you're somehow involved in some kind of interaction with the game member, it could go any way. Cause they really, it's you or them.
Yeah.
You know?
So when I said that, he had been back in the news again.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the crime rate and the murder rate have actually been reminiscent of the 1980s and early 90s.
Yeah.
And there was a report that Tacoma homicides are up more than 50% over the same period as last year in 2021.
Wow. And
I think there was 37 homicides. I didn't write it down, but 37 homicides, I think 3 or 4 police shootings.
So I'm kind of curious to know, though, what would be the statistics pre-COVID? What would comparing it now to pre-COVID be? Because, I mean, last year was COVID.
They were down because it was actually on a downward trend. It's just been recently.
Even like 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Tacoma had really been on a decline.
Wow.
And like nothing, you know, violent crimes were really down. But after COVID, it shot up. Like, I think they said it was like from that time, it was 200% from the 80s. Like, it rose 200% in that time. But it was on a steady downcline. Now it's back up. And it's very reminiscent of the 80s and 90s of that time. And so they had recently done an interview with him because, you know, statistics are looking the same in Tacoma as they were in the 80s and 90s. And like I said, he was going over, you know, he even said it felt like it's feeling the same.
Really?
Yeah. He goes, the climate, the activity, he goes, it's feeling very reminiscent of that that time when he first moved in.
Interesting.
Yeah. And just for shits and giggles, I looked it up as of today.
Mm-hmm.
The house that he lives at is estimated worth $530,718.
Wow.
From his $10,000 investment.
Yeah.
And like I said, he had no plans of selling.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still in that house as of today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a good investment.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the time the Army took on the Crips.
Wow. Army Rangers.
Army Rangers.
Looking badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't condone vigilantism. I'm just going to say.
No.
But I'm also not going to sit in a house where I know people are going to shoot me and not shoot back.
Yeah.
If I have the means.
This is where I wish we had one person on.
Who?
Because she was stationed there at Fort Lewis.
Who?
Angie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's why she wanted to come back to the area, because she enjoyed her time. No,
I know she
time.
Was from here, yeah.
She enjoyed her time at Fort Lewis and mm-hmm. wanted to come back, so. I wish we could have had her on, but short notice and all.
Yeah. Well, you know, always add to it.
Yeah.
Talk to her later.
Maybe.
Yeah. Mom.
Hey, Ange. Hey, Jason.
That is definitely a crazy... That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure some, you know, people got shot. I don't know how that many bullets flies around and people aren't going to get shot.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful that it wasn't. But I can
just picture gangbangers firing, like just shooting over the tops of cars. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They're it's not like they go out to target practice or anything.
No.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about trained professional
soldiers
yeah. And yeah, and just probably stupid teenage kids who don't know shit about shit.
I'm just worried about their money.
Yeah. And not getting caught, you know, not going to jail. But yeah, that's kind of a shame. Only one person was held accountable for that.
Yeah. Over 10 minutes of gunfire.
Yeah. And they couldn't find more than just the one guy who's holding the gun for his bud.
Yeah.
His
friend with no name.
Yeah, that's some fancy police work, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Not to talk shit a lot about the police or anything, but there's just always such a need for improvement, or, you know, it's easier to see things on the outside and say, this is what you should be doing. But
yeah.
When a community is asking for help and they're reaching out and they're calling and they're giving you, you know, leads and tips, and there's clear activity of things that are happening, and then you don't do anything, you kind of have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all right. Well, good job, Bryce.
Thanks.
Look at you, all professional and shit. With your research.
Researched.
Yeah. You researched the hell out of this shit. Good job.
Thanks.
Well, as always, guys, we welcome your thoughts and opinions and would love to have a discussion with you on social media about this one. And we thank you for joining us. We appreciate all the love and support. And as always, be kind to one another, stay safe, and stay out of the damn woods.
Yeah, the woods.
Or Tacoma.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
What Happens in the Woods is an independent podcast and is managed and produced by Gospel for the Rebels, LLC. Research and content are presented by host Jessica, with all editing and producing done by your favorite resident techie, Bryce. We believe in transparency and will always list our sources and information in our episode notes. We are always looking for new cases and stories to tell. We welcome your interaction with us on Facebook and Instagram at WHIT Podcast and at Twitter, What Happens in the Woods, INT2. Or if you prefer, our website is whathappensinthewoods.com. the campfire is open to all. Thank you for your continued support of our podcast. If you love us and want to continue to hear us bring you episodes, please share and like us wherever you can. But the best way to help us grow is to hit all 5 stars and review us on whatever platform you get your podcast fix. Until we meet again, campers, stay safe and stay out of the damn woods.